Explain gardening for the Gulf Coast with Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Hey, lots of things to talk about this morning. We had a great conversation with David Hubble. And David, David is actually producing foodstuffs, canning jars and other things. And I don't know how the what's the state of that that business, David, but if there's ways that people can order from you, boy, they'd sure like to do that. You know, the other question we got, because we're talking about melaton, we talked about why it's such a great fruit. David has pulled out a story that a Pinterest-based article on that predicts that melaton will be the great trend. Alligator pears will be the great trend for next year. And so you're going to see it a lot in cooking. You're going to hear people talking about it a lot. You know, there it is. It doesn't need to be a trend for you to use it. There's a long-term trend here on the Gulf Coast where melaton has been one of our favorite fruits for a long time, has a lot of uses. You know, there's sort of almost a whole culture around melaton. It's really, really a grapefruit. Where do you get it? And that's the question. So we talked about the fact that the melaton that you buy at Rouse's and at the grocery store is fine for cooking, but it may not produce very well here on the Gulf Coast because it's used to the shorter day cycles of the tropics, and it may take really consistently long period of short days. The short of it is that by the time it starts flowering, it's going to be too late here. And so we have Gulf Coast varieties that start flowering as early as possible. Those are something we hold on to and we cherish and we take really good care of them. David's doing a great job. David, that may have to be your cottage industry here, is producing fruit so that people can produce their own melaton. We tried to do that one time at the Botanical Gardens with fruit that we could get that was from New Orleans, and it worked okay, but it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work. But if David could do that for us, that'd be great. We're trying to build up stock, and those who have the Gulf Coast strains of melaton need to hold on to them because they're very precious. They're very important. Dan, you have a sacred trust with that melaton. So we want to make sure that we do that. David's kitchen info on the stuff he does, Hubble's Hearth LLC. You can find it on Facebook in two places, Hubble's Hearth LLC or the Melaton Man of Mobile. And let me spell melaton for you. It's Mirliton. Mirliton is how it looks. Mirliton Man of Mobile. You can find that on Facebook or Hubble's Hearth, HUBBELL, Hubble's Hearth LLC. Check those out under Facebook. Dan, do me a favor. Dan, who has the sacred trust of maintaining this alligator pear, this melaton that he has, that's a beautiful melaton. Dan, if it messes up, it's okay. But if you can hold on to it, let's do it. Go on to David's Facebook page and check him out and have a conversation with David Hubble about how to maintain those melaton. And if any of you are interested in following up on any of this, that's the way to do it. You can go to Melaton Man of Mobile or Hubble's Hearth LLC on Facebook and talk with David Hubble about it. It's a great thing to do. There it is. Melaton. Making sure we don't lose track of this great Gulf Coast vegetable. You ain't going to hear about it in those folks up in Maine. They ain't ever going to talk about it. They just because they don't grow in Maine. They don't grow in Boston. They don't grow in Birmingham. They don't grow in Atlanta. Southern Living ain't going to write about it because, at least how to grow it, because most of their audience is not living on the Gulf Coast. So they got to go for the lowest common denominator. And that doesn't, it just doesn't work. I mean, it's above their, the demographic they're shooting for. It goes above their heads. So you're not going to read about it in those places. It is a Gulf Coast privilege to grow melatonin. So that's what we talked about. That's why we had David and Dan is fretting over that brown spot. Yeah, it looks pretty bad, Dan. It doesn't look good. But let's talk to David and you get on there with David and you all talk about it and see what you can do. Okay. So David Preston, David P. David, it would be. I'm not going to repeatedly say David of the dogs, because David's better than that. He has dogs that give him grief, but he loves his dogs and he loves his garden. He's got a great garden. So, here's the thing. David is trying to repair his lawn, his St. Augustine lawn. He's got some gaps. We did the right things in terms of soil prep. Now he's wondering, where do I get St. Augustine? So there's two ways of looking at this, and let me go back. If you're going to repair St. Augustine, please do not look for seeds. I do not know of any seed for warm season grasses that is worth buying. I think seed is inevitably a mistake with any grass that stays green in July and August. I could go into the reasons why that is. I'm not going to try to bore you now, but there's good reasons why this is the case. It has to do with flowering. It has to do with what a pain it would be. You can get seed for Bahia grass, which is a warm season grass that stays green in summer. Bahia grass does, but man, oh man, what a nightmare. Because it's putting up seed heads every 3 or 4 days. It's different with winter, with cool season grasses, because usually they only put up one seed head. They're annuals. It's different story. But perennials, you don't want to start them from seed. It's just that simple. So St. Augustine grass is not even available from seed at all. I mean, just period. You're not going to find the seed. But here's what you can do. There are two ways of doing it. You can go buy the sod, and that's a conventional. It's just fine. Just go buy some good sod from somebody, good St. Augustine sod. That's fine. And it's in the long run, it's probably the easiest thing to do and maybe the smartest thing to do and the most successful is just to go buy some pieces of sod. But maybe you can't find small pieces of sod in good St. Augustine. So here's a little trick. St. Augustine can be sprigged, is the old name we used to call it. You can call it sprigs or runners, whatever you want to call it. And these St. Augustine produces these long runners, and they start rooting at the nodes. Those are clones. They're each one of those plants is a clone. If you can find look for really good St. Augustine that's not getting any care, you know, if you go to the cemetery or if you go to some old house and you see some St. Augustine growing there and you think, gosh, that's the best St. Augustine lawn I've ever seen, and they don't do it. I mean, they don't put fertilizer, they don't put herbicides or pesticides on it. It just looks great. That's a good strain of St. Augustine for our climate because it's been surviving here for a long time. If you can't, there will often be sprigs of that grow out, trying to grow out over the concrete or into the sidewalk. You can just pull up a sprig, cut it off, take it back, and plant it. And that sprig will take off. It'll have some little roots on it. That's how hard it is to do a sprig. It's very simple to do. David, is this making sense? Just take a sprig. You just take a sprig. You can get as many sprigs as you want. Find a really good place where there is good St. Augustine. Each of those little nodes, it'll have about 3 inches of stem, and then it'll have a leaf sprout, and right underneath it there'll be a root. That's what happens on those runners. Just take some scissors or pruning shears, cut that off, pull it up gently with some roots left on it, bury it in your ground, and it'll start. Yep. All right, we're going to be back.
You can take all the tea in China, put it in a big brown bag for me, sail right round all the seven oceans, drop it straight into the deep blue sea. She's as sweet as Tupelo honey. She's an angel of the first degree. She's as sweet. She's as sweet as Tupelo honey. Just like honey, baby.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Yeah. So we got other good things to talk about. So here we go. Several things were coming up about growing melaton, and just we're trying to help you out. If you can't find the melaton, hold on. We're working on it. We're trying to grow these out. We're trying to provide information for people who do have it. Tony sends me a lot of really good information or really good pictures, wanting information about his camellias, and boy, he's got a lot of them. The white looks like one of Sawada's whites, and I think it's probably Empress. I'm guessing it's Empress. It's a beautiful white, though. It's a really good white. There's some others there. I'm not sure. I'll have to figure them out. But they look similar to a lot of others. It looks like there's a little pink perfection in there, which is a pretty common one. And classic pink perfection. Tony in Fairhope asked me about growing a weeping redbud. So let me tell you that Decatur, Alabama, is about as far from Mobile as you could get and still be in Alabama. And I like to remind people, Alabama is the size of most European countries, particularly from a north-south perspective. I mean, it is a big state, and the climate changes dramatically. Basically, three climate zones difference between southern and north Alabama. And what that means is that things that grow well in South Alabama often don't grow well in North Alabama, particularly things that grow well here on the coast, and vice versa. The red bud, that even though they say it's for zones 5 to 9, well, yeah, the people who are selling it want you to think that you can grow it anywhere. That's their goal. Because that's how they make the most money. But let me assure you that red buds do not live a long time here. You can plant a red bud here, and it will live about 7 years. I will give it 7 years before it starts falling apart. Now, you might get 7 years of pleasure out of it. And that would be okay. That would be good, but don't expect it to perform like it does. There are a lot of problems. The soil has problems here. It's too wet for red buds to perform well. It's also our winters are too short. And what that means is that it may not flower well, but there's another problem that may develop, and that is that it allows certain pathogens in the soil, certain soil bad guys that eat up on the roots of red buds. It allows them to proliferate because the winter doesn't kill them back. And so it's like red buds have a very, very short life. And there are also pathogens that get into the stems because of our warm climate. And because of our humidity, that is a huge issue. Move up to Tennessee Valley into the limestone areas where it's drier, where they get dry periods during summer, where they get long, cold winters. It's going to do really well, but I wouldn't suggest it here. I wouldn't suggest it here. So there it is. Just something a little bit more to think about. So David is asking me, and David's asked a couple of times, so I'm trying to get to these questions. They're coming in to us. They come into us by text, and I have to read them as I'm talking. So I stumble sometimes, and I can't get to them all. But David is sending me a text. I'm asking about planting blueberry bushes in my front yard now. You know, if you can find the blueberry bushes now, David, and you can find a good selection, check with A-Bloom, check with other places to see, check with, Feed and Seed in Fairhope. If you can find Old Time Feed and Seed in Fairhope, if you can find great blueberry plants, and you can ask me what those are, you should plant them now. It's better. Blueberries are difficult to establish. I will just tell you, once they're established, they're great. Getting them established, it can be tricky. That's why the best time for blueberries is fall. Planting them in fall because you don't have to worry about watering them over the winter. You don't have to worry about that transition period. But the sooner you can get a good blueberry, the better. David, if you get blueberries from Old Time, if you want to go back to Old Time and get more, which is where you got your first one, get two varieties that are different, that have different names, so that you'll be sure that they get cross-pollinated. So get you two different named varieties. And you can, Premier is a great one, Climax. These are all rabbitized. They all do real well. They need cross-pollination. Some of the high bush blueberries, and they may have some at Old Time. I don't know what all they've got. The high bush blueberries don't need cross-pollination. But I recommend starting out with the rabbit eye blueberries because they're the ones that have been consistently good performers for us. Just get two named varieties of rabbit eye blueberry. Does that make sense? If you don't, it doesn't make sense, you got to call me and talk about it. So, Dan has now got a new story about his Melitol, which I'm really interested to find that she didn't get them from John Olive, that she got them from New Orleans itself. So that's good. If she's got any leftovers, we need to get them. You know, here's the thing. Anybody who's growing great melaton, I don't want to go on about this. We're gonna end the conversation on melaton here very soon. But anybody who's growing great melaton and who has a lot left over this year, more than you want to use, tithe a few of those and let's give them to John Olive. I think, Dan, if we can get John Olive to grow them or give some to other people who have space to grow them, so we will have a good crop of these for the coming year. That's very important because it's very hard to find these old Gulf Coast strains. We should be doing everything we can to keep up with them. And there it is. And I hope that I've made sense about, for those of you who are interested in starting grass from seed, I hope I've made sense. You can't do it from seed here. If you want to do a winter grass, winter rye, and that's not a bad idea. You know, for some people in some yards, I'd say don't worry about what happens in summer. I'd say just put out straw where you want to walk in summer. Put out a pine straw or something where you want to walk. Pull the pine straw back, plant it, plant a nice green path in October, so you'll have a nice green, beautiful green path and lawn in October, November, December, January, February, March, and April, which is how long that rye is going to last. That's much of the year. That's 7 months of the year. That's 60% of the year. And then the other 40%, just say, let's just put some pine straw down. Let's just put some pine straw down. That's a good policy for PAS. And it's something that I've done a lot. And I like that. I like doing that a lot. It makes a whole lot of sense. But there are no grasses that you can start from seed that are reliable that you can do for summer. The only ones are things like Bahia, and you'll regret that immensely. So we're now back to where we started, and we're going to close out the show. We've got 30 more minutes, and I encourage you to call in. We're going to talk about this is your birthday. This is your birthday. This is the birthday of your garden. You have to understand that there are no advantages to waiting for most things now. In fact, of the matter, if you want to start tomatoes, you got to start them from seeds in containers. If you want to start eggplants, you're going to, in another 2 weeks, you need to be doing that. For most peppers, I'd go ahead and start them now. Put a little heat blanket underneath them to get those peppers started. There's a lot of advantages to doing that, no matter what kind of pepper you're growing. The only things, peas need to be planted right now. Peas, we definitely got the peas in the ground. Favas, we got to get in the ground. If you're wanting lots more greens, I think it's a great time to plant turnips. Plant those turnips right in the ground. It's a great time to plant broccoli rabe. Plant them right in the ground. Plant that broccoli rabe right in the ground. Start your carrots now. If you're growing turnips or carrots or broccoli rabe and some of those types of plants, you might see some insect damage, particularly because our winter has been so warm. Get a Spinosad product. We can talk about it. It's very easy. It's proving to be very effective at controlling the yellow margined leaf beetle, which has been a problem for us, for many of us, on our turnips. If you're having problems with your turnips, don't spray them with dishwashing liquid. Let me tell you the thing to do. It'll work. We had a folks call a couple of weeks ago saying, man, somebody told me to spray them with dishwashing liquid. I did. It killed all my turnips. Yeah, well, it does. And so we'll talk about why. And we'll come back. Rusty, we'll talk about those cypress and anything else y'all want to talk about.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's the Gulf Coast Saturday morning with Plain Gardening. Lots of good questions we need to follow up on this morning. If anybody has, by the way, we stumbled around looking at melatonin recipes. Casseroles are a great way to do melatonin, but there may be other ways of doing it too. It's fun. I almost want to talk about all the things I'm doing in my garden right now in terms of recipes, and maybe we're going to get to that this morning if we have a little bit of time. Meanwhile, I'll have to say there are people, you know, when you go to the zoo. Sometimes you go to the zoo and you see somebody and they're throwing rocks at the bears just to see if they can get the bear's reaction. Just what is that bear going to do? They're throwing rocks at the tiger. They're throwing rocks at the bear. What is that bear going to do? So Polecat, in his good-natured way, is one of those people. When he comes by my cage, he throws rocks at me just to see what I'll do. So Polecat today raised the issue of tillers. And, you know, it is an interesting – I think a lot about tillers, and I talk a lot about tillers, and I understand more and more why people who use tillers a lot in their gardens run into a lot of problems. It is possible, and I've decided it's possible to live in some areas – and there's some parts of North there it is, Polecat. You got the bear going. So it's possible to live in North Alabama and use a tiller without doing a lot of damage that you will recognize immediately. Here on the Gulf Coast, using a tiller, particularly more than once a year, and maybe more than once every 3 to 5 years, can be very damaging to your yard. And I don't know the benefit of doing it even once, and I'll tell you why for a lot of reasons. But the first story that I always tell is we're preparing to build our gardens because this is our birthday. We're going to plant a bunch of seeds. Everything's happening. We're going to plant our lawns. So everybody's going to, you know, they're going to say, oh, I guess I got to rent a tiller. No, do not rent a tiller. Here's the first reason why. Let me just tell you this very simple fact. The topsoil should stay on the top. And I can't emphasize this enough. Your best soil is on the top. Why is your best soil on the top? Well, it's because that's where soil is made of organic matter. That is the decaying parts of plants and other little things. It always forms that black layer is on the top. When you dig down underneath it, look, it's just life. What's underneath it? You know, it could be a bad clay that you can't dig through. It could be a hard pan. It could be a lot of things. But you want to keep that topsoil on top. And plants live in the topsoil. They live on the top. So plant roots, if you want your plants to thrive, you don't want to have good soil 6 feet down. You don't want to have good soil 3 feet down. You don't want to have good soil 2 feet down. You want your good soil to be in the first few inches, 6 inches. That's where the topsoil should be. And there's a reason why that topsoil needs to be there. It's because it holds oxygen really well. If it's good, the better the topsoil, the more oxygen it holds. And the more oxygen that that soil holds, particularly in, with our rains being what they are, the more oxygen that soil holds, the better your plants are going to grow. The more particle spaces there are, the better your plants are. And that needs to be in the first 6 inches. It doesn't help if the oxygen layer is down a foot. It doesn't help. Tillers also create hard pans. They're very, if you think about how they work, these tillers with these blades churning and churning and churning. It's like they pound the soil and they create a hard pan, what's called a hard pan, a few inches down. So you think you're breaking it up? You're actually creating a hard pan where that tiller bottoms out. Here's the other thing that happens. Soil, when it's good soil, when it's good topsoil, and you've had a lot of creatures working on it for a long time, it's virgin. What those creatures have done is they've re-cemented these particles together with their creature glue into components that are ideal for the growth of plants. So it's not too fine. It's not too coarse. It's just perfect. They've kind of cemented everything together just perfectly. How do the creatures know to work with the plants in this way? Well, it makes a lot of sense if you think about it. I mean, plants learn to adapt to what was developing in the soil. So they need that soil texture. And it's really kind of amazing how it all works together. But yes, you need this great pore space that's created by the glue of all of these creatures working together under the soil. You take a tiller, you break it up into a powder like flour, fine, you've destroyed that structure. And the soil immediately collapses within about three rains. The soil collapses into a denser mass than it was before you tilled. And so your plant roots can't grow in it. It's a big issue. You also burn up the organic matter in a terrible way. Tillers do all of these things wrong. Polecat threw a rock. This is why I'm doing this. But, you know, it's well-timed, Polecat. That rock was well-timed because we need to be aware. We need to be aware of how to produce our soils. If you crack it, all you have to do is crack your soil. And I tell people, you don't want to turn it. Turning is the wrong idea. I can tell you why people turned. It was great for about 3 years if you had virgin soil, but beyond that, you don't have virgin soil. You can't. There's not anything there for you to mine. You'll destroy the soil as soon as you do it. But if you crack it, if you just crack it with your fork. So I recommend taking a fork, wiggling it down into the soil, leaning back on that fork. Just lean back on it a little bit, if you can see what I'm saying. Visualize this. I'm taking a garden fork, four-tine garden fork. I'm just wiggling it into the ground. No matter how hard the ground is, you can always wiggle it in. It's amazing. And then you just pull back. You lean back on that handle. Just lean back on it until the ground cracks. That's all you need to do. Okay? If you got weeds or something, you can pull them out then. If you got perennial weeds, you can do that. And then, you know, that's what you need to do. Then you can come back on it with organic matter if you like, which I often recommend. If it's good soil, you don't really need to do any of that, but don't turn it upside down. Keep the topsoil on the top. And you don't need a tiller. You don't need to break it up. You're not looking for white flour. You're not going to make white bread out of this. You're going to make oatmeal out of this. It needs to be nice and coarse and large particles. Well, not instant oatmeal. No, nobody remembers what real oatmeal looks like anymore. It's real crumbly. It's more like granola. Let's say we want our soil to be more like granola than we want it to be like white flour. You don't want those small particles. Those are bad. Poquette, did I do okay? Was that all right? So there it is. That's it. Hey, Randy is over in Moss Point. Is asking me about bare root cypress. Can you do bare root cypress? Yes. Yes, you certainly can. And it sounds like something you'd get from Arbor Day. My only reluctance in saying that is that there are certain types of cypress that grow in the bayous in Mississippi, and another type of cypress that grows in the middle of the river systems. And I hate mixing the two up. And the folks at the Arbor Day Foundation in Minnesota or Wisconsin or wherever they are, they don't know a lot about cypress and what they do down here. So talk to me about where you're getting this. But yes, you can get bare root cypress. They'll do just fine. Cypress are actually really easy to grow. They can be really easy to grow. But let's talk about what you need and where you can get it, and let's figure that out, okay? Let's talk about it a little more. So, folks, give us a call this morning. Let's talk about your garden. We've kind of got everything set up. You know, if you've got a space in your lawn, you're wondering what to do, how to set up a vegetable garden, because today's your birthday. And because you got all these seeds, you know you need to plant them. And you want to plant some peas, because I told you, man, you got to plant some peas. You have to do it. You need a row about 16 feet. If you're going to grow the knee-high peas, waist-high peas, I'd get a row about 16 feet. That'll give you enough. If you're going to grow the ones on a trellis, it's amazing what you can get out of 8 feet. 8 feet of trellis peas. You can get a lot of peas out of that. Maybe enough to make you happy. So it doesn't take a lot of peas. It doesn't take a lot of space. Go ahead and get those peas planted. All you need to do, if you've got a lawn space, it's been in lawn for a long time, it's probably already got some great topsoil, just clean off those grasses. Clean the grasses out. Break it up. Cut it up. Clean the grasses out. Crack it, just like I'm telling you, because it's probably been compressed because you've been walking around on it. You drove the tractor over it. You drove the car over it. Your kids have been jumping up and down on it. Crack it, just like I said. Make some beds about 3 feet wide where you're planting your peas. Make a path about 18 inches wide next to it and another bed about 3 feet wide. Doesn't take a lot of space. In fact, just make two rows. Start out with two rows. Clean out and you know, make sure the grass doesn't get into it. That's the one issue. But you don't need pieces of wood. You don't need anything else. It's just that simple. You're probably going to need a little bit of lime and a little bit of fertilizer if that's all you got. And you can actually start that this year. Your peas should do really good. You might, if it's the first time you've grown peas, you might need to get a thing that you sprinkle on peas that help them to set their own nitrogen, and you can get that sometimes when you buy those peas, and you might want to do that if you've never grown peas before. Johnny wants to talk about rutabagas. Yay. Hey, and you know, the rutabagas, what a subject. I will tell you that rutabagas are an old Southern tradition. It's really amazing. People didn't – I don't know why we didn't talk about them in polite company that much. People are getting really excited about rutabagas nowadays. I have horror stories about rutabagas from the old days. But Johnny, we're going to talk about good rutabagas when we come back.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Polecat. Yeah, no, listen. I'm telling you, it's planting time. It's your birthday. Go order the seeds. It's great. You got time to order seeds. You actually have a little, everything I've talked about, you have time. It would have been a little better had you planted your favas earlier, if you planted your peas earlier. But listen, I'm telling you now. Order your seeds. Go order your seeds now. It's not too late for the tomato plants. Get you a heating mat, Polecat, so that you can get those seeds germinated early in case it turns cold. When they come in, it's going to be a little cooler when they come in. Get you a heating mat. We can talk about how to use it. Doesn't cost that much. Get you some tomato seeds. Plant them in a container. It's a time to do it. It's a time to order those things. Where do I order seeds from? Boy, Heidi, you know, there's some great seeds here so locally, but I do order a lot of my seeds because it gives me a lot more options. And I think particularly if you're looking for tomato varieties, you can get them from a lot of different places. Southern Exposure Seed Exchange, a great source for seeds. For the South, not perfect, not everything I need, but they're really great. Baker Creek Heirlooms, rareseeds.com is how they're listed on there, rareseeds.com. Baker Creek Evergreen Seeds, a lot of Asian seeds that I use. Territorial for a lot of greens. Territorial's up in Wisconsin. Territorial Seeds, they got great seeds for us. Johnny's Select Seeds out of Maine, sometimes I'll use some of their seeds. They really don't understand the South very well, but they understand the plants that grow well during our cool season. So if I'm looking for cool season plants, I'll go to Territorial. And there are two Johnny Select Seed. They're good. But Baker Creek's a great place to have fun. Look through the catalog. Call me next week. We'll talk about the different varieties they have, and we'll kind of talk about how they do. Baker Creek Heirlooms, otherwise known as rareseeds.com. Southern Exposure. Seeds, great place. Look through their catalogs. I've got a lot of seeds from them this year. I'm always very excited to get their stuff. They got some stuff nobody else has got. Really good stuff. And listen, there's a place called Almost Eden. I'm going to work on that. It's not a seed source. David Hubble's going to really like this. It's over in New Orleans. They've got a lot of really great plants, a lot of great figs. I'm going to be talking more about them in the future as I know more about them. Johnny, rutabagas. Tell me about rutabagas.
I got a slight problem with mine. They've got the root is about 2 to 3 inches in diameter and purple, and the leaves are about 18 inches tall, but a couple of weeks ago they started developing right along the edge of the leaves on the biggest leaves, on the oldest leaves, a sort of a yellow line around the outside. It looks like some sort of deficiency or overabundance of something. I don't know really what it is. I planted them in some real good compost on the corner of the garden, only about 6 of them. I didn't need that many, but it looks like the new leaves that are coming on don't seem to have this down in the center, but the older leaves that are up high, they've got this yellow kind of an outline around the outside of them. Other than that, they look good.
Yeah. So, you know, I do that happens a lot in winter, and leaves will get yellow, and I think there are some nutrient transfer issues within the plants. I think it has to do, and my best bet is it has to do with fluctuating moisture levels, maybe excess moisture, but more than that, changes in temperature. When the temperature changes, Plants don't move things through the soil as well as they used to. They don't move stuff up from the soil. They don't move it through their stems as well as they used to. Their photosynthesis is declining for a lot of reasons, and so they're all trying to regulate all this. You know, how do I get? It's like, you know, it's kind of like. Well, I sort of think of it like you know trying to ship goods from one part of the country to another, and then you run into a bunch of snow, and it kind of slows everybody down. So the people who are trying to manufacture the cars over here said, "Oh man, we haven't got any alternator parts because the trucks got stopped in the snow." Well, that's sort of what's happening in the plants. Everything has to be there at the right time, and during winter it gets harder for that to happen. It happens in summer as well, but it can be harder. And then it recovers as soon as the temperatures, and so we got these warm temperatures, and it's recovered. I think it's fine. If you add extra nutrients in a situation like that, it's probably not going to make any difference. It might even create problems because there's not a nutrient deficiency in the soil. It's just the plant's ability to take those nutrients up has been reduced because of excess rainfall or lack of sunlight, which is sometimes a problem in winter, or too cold. Did I talk enough?
Yeah.
Yeah. So tell me how you cook rutabagas.
I'm doing it quick because I know you ran out of time.
Yeah, yeah.
I cut them up into little cubes about an inch in diameter, and I boil mine. I do them sort of like potatoes. I like them salty, salt with pepper and butter.
Mm. Yeah. So do you do it in the oven? Is that what you do?
No, I just do them like I'm boiling potatoes.
Boiling potatoes. Okay, good.
Cut them up and cook them. You know, probably the old fashioned way is, you know, you always see them sitting there in sort of a liquid.
Yeah, yeah.
In a restaurant or something, but I like them like that with some onions in them, maybe.
Yeah.
And I like that salty, peppery sort of a experience. I'm sure there's many other ways to do it. But I usually don't have very many to deal with. So.
Yeah, and I don't like rutabagas mushy, but it sounds like yours aren't that mushy. It sounds like they're kind of still have a little bit of bite to them.
No, I like them firm when they're cooked.
Yeah, good. Yeah, that's right. And
everything else in the garden looks great. The kale is the biggest I've ever seen it, and so far no predators have attacked the kale at all. I don't really, I don't see any reason to grow turnip greens. I hate to say it, but I don't see any reason to grow turnip greens anymore because kale is much easier to grow.
Kale is so much easier to grow. I agree 100%. I will tell you, I had some turnips last night. I had turnip roots and turnip tops. And I remembered why it is that we want to grow turnips. Turnips have a special taste. I mean,
yeah. It
has a special taste. It's hard to reproduce. And I love kale. I love kale. Yeah. Kale is easier than collards. It's amazing. I don't know why we it's just the easiest thing in the world to grow for us here on the Gulf Coast. There's nothing fancy about it. I mean, you eat it just like you're eating collards. It's really great.
Yeah. It takes a lot less time to cook
and really has a great flavor. A wonderful thing, very sweet. And boy, we just picked up on a great subject here. But turnips, you know, I think I figured out the secret to turnips. I may have figured out what to do about my carrots, which keep getting eaten up. So we need to talk about this next week when we have some time. And Charlie's not reminding me that we're having to come right here to the end and take a break. But, boy, it's been fun. Hey, folks, it's your birthday this week. This is your birthday. It's time to eat the cake. It's time to unwrap the presents. It's time to get in the yard and start planting because it's the birth of a new year of your garden. And if we don't get to it right now, we're not going to have this new year. This is when it all starts. It starts right here. It starts right here. It starts with those peas. Listen, if you haven't grown peas before, go ahead and order some peas. We'll talk about next week. We'll talk about how to set up a trellis. I ain't gonna pick no peas. I tell you what, that's a nice music. We're gonna be back next week. Y'all get some planting done.
Because everything is on the phone, you know you got